In a resignation letter published in the Topeka Capital Journal, a KU professor says he's leaving because of concealed carry on campus. He also makes the case that academics like him will generally choose not to, will generally choose to work in states that don't allow guns in classrooms. But not all Kansans are sorry to see the professor go. For proof, look no further than the comments section. "Goodbye, good luck, won't miss you a bit," one Kansan writes. "Like you have ever been anywhere near a college classroom," someone responds. "Like you have ever been anywhere near a firearm," comes the retort. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, the professor tells his story. Later on, a proponent of concealed carry responds. Jacob Dorman, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How long have you been at KU?
Well, I started in 2007, and we won the national championship that year. They could be related. I don't know.
The national championship?
In sports.
Basketball.
Yeah. It's been 10 years.
What do you teach?
I teach history and American studies. My specialty is African American history.
So tell me more about your own background, where you come from, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm happy to. But I also want to start out by saying that this is not really about me. I think it's more about professors as a whole. And I'm happy to speak as one professor and to report how professors as a whole feel about guns in classrooms, which is negative. But just for the curious, I have lived in Connecticut, New York, D.C., Boston, Chicago, the Bay Area, San Francisco, Palo Alto, and Los Angeles, and Austin. I'm well-traveled. I grew up mostly in California.
So how has your experience been at KU so far, at the university itself, and just living in Kansas?
Well, you know, I wrote this letter because I really loved my time in Kansas, and I really love KU. I think KU is a terrific university, and I think that Kansas is a great state. And I compare that to the image of Kansas outside of Kansas, which is oftentimes not that good. And the only thing that people seem to know about Kansas is that it's flat. So I have to just start with basic geography when I explain eastern Kansas and say it's not flat. You know, it's rolling hills. There's coal country. There's oil, and there's racial diversity. There's all these things that people don't associate with Kansas, which is, I think, a shame. I think Kansas, northeastern Kansas, it has got a terrific quality of life. You know, low cost of living. I think the problem in northeastern Kansas and Kansas as a whole is just more about there's not enough jobs, in my opinion, and so people have to leave the state if they want to get a high-paying job in many cases.
So I guess I'm really just trying to get a feel for, you know, it really is just this law that's prompted you to leave?
Well, it's this law that's made it impossible for me to continue. There's obviously, you know, whenever somebody makes a big decision like to move, to take a new job, there's obviously other factors. There's push and pull factors. But for me, I just, to me, having guns in the classroom is so antithetical to what education should be about, and would make it so impossible to have the kinds of open conversations about sensitive topics that we do indeed have in classrooms in KU all the time, despite the kind of braying of the conservative critics who can't seem to believe that that's actually true. Well, it's actually true. It's important for conservative students as well as for liberal students to be able to hear a diverse set of viewpoints. And that's what we in the professoriate attempt to facilitate every day in the humanities and social sciences. That's what we're doing. So the fact of concealed carry just made it impossible for me to countenance teaching at KU any longer.
I feel like I should acknowledge here that concealed carry as a fact on campus is actually being debated in the legislature today. They're debating what they're calling the carve out. On Friday, the Senate Ways and Means Committee recommended that the Senate pass a bill that would exempt healthcare facilities and colleges from the concealed carry requirement. We won't know how those debates pan out, obviously, during this show. But for now, I mean, can you tell me more about maybe a conversation you have witnessed in the classroom that you think would be dramatically changed by just the possibility that a student in the room is carrying a gun?
Well, I would explain that by saying that there's something called classroom dynamics, and that we as professors have to really work hard to create positive dynamics, classroom dynamics, to allow sensitive conversations to occur. So for example, you know, one conversation that we have in my class each semester, on usually the first or second day of class, is we talk about gender dynamics, and we talk about the differences between how some women and some men communicate. We talk about negative, we talk about mansplaining, we talk about the unfortunate tendency of some people, whether they be men or women, to overtalk and to not leave room for other people to have their opinions. So if that can be a problem with no guns in the classroom, imagine how much more of a problem classroom dynamics become if everyone knows that there is a gun in the classroom. There are, you know, people with problematic personalities amongst us, and I know half the listeners are thinking, yeah, like Jacob Dorman. But, you know, we all know there are some people who, even at the age of 21, are still somewhat immature, aggressive, not willing to listen to others. We know that the human brain develops until age 25. So physiologically, 21-year-olds are not even fully adult. Now, we get around that in a lot of situations like the military, where 21 or even 18-year-olds are part of command structures, where they're being enculturated into responsible use of firearms by the very command structure of the military. But if you take people out of that command structure, what happens is that it's not more often than not, but 45% of all the incidents of unwanted discharges of firearms on college campuses today come from arguments. They don't come from mass shooters on a rampage. Those are only 2.4% of all the incidents. Now, they're no doubt a larger percentage of the casualties, but it's only 2.4% of the incidents. So I think the public has to take a step back, take a deep breath, and look at the actual problem and design medicine that's not worse than the disease. Right now, guns are more often used in the commission of suicide or murder-suicide than they're used for rampages. In fact, they're more often just accidental discharges that injure or kill than they are than there are casualties from mass rampages. And that last statement of mine is a hypothetical. Somebody has to run the numbers, and I haven't seen those numbers. But we know the total number of incidents of just simply accidental discharges is far more than the number of rampages. So I agree that we have a problem in this society with mass shootings. Obviously, we do. But we don't want to have a solution that ends up killing and injuring more people than the original problem.
So backing away a little bit from the safety debate, and I think we'll probably get back to that debate, but I'm interested in the perspective you bring to how academically this might play out, because that is something that I haven't heard discussed as much. You write, Kansas can have great universities or it can have concealed carry in classrooms, but it cannot have both. That is a bold statement.
Thank you. Look, There's two or three or four sides to this issue. On the one hand, you have the existing professoriate at schools like KU and K-State and Hayes and all the other Regents universities. So you have the people that are here at the moment. Of those people, some like myself are leaving. Now, everyone asks how many, and the number I hear so far is, well, there's been 10 leaving.
Throughout the state, 10 people who are known to be leaving.
At KU.
Oh, okay.
At KU so far. But the problem is that's really an undercount, because we don't, you know, most people are afraid to come forward and speak their piece about this. And if you look at the kind of fire hose of hatred that I've had directed at me in the last week, you can kind of see why. But there's many more people for whom the prospect of having armed students meant that, you know, they decided to retire early, or it was one factor among many factors that meant that they took a job elsewhere out of state. So we do have a loss of professors. But there's an even bigger issue, which is that KU is going to be, and K-State, the Kansas universities, are going to become less competitive in recruiting future professors to come. And a lot of those people simply will not even apply. Now, right now, I can hear a whole chorus of the boo birds and NRA members who like to sit in the right field bleachers saying, well, fine, you know, let the liberals leave. What's the problem with that? Well, one problem is that the adjuncts, somebody wrote, there's all kinds of adjuncts writing at Barnes and Noble, you know, working at Barnes and Nobles.
People
right
who teach on a per class basis.
Yes. So while that's true, I mean, my question to the state of Kansas is, do you really want the second stringers or third stringers or fourth stringers to be teaching instead of your first choice? Because that's what you're saying is going to happen. The other problem is that the adjuncts and the people that, you know, didn't get those job offers are, on the whole, have the same politics as the people who do get the job offers. You know, there's another misperception here, which is that the idea that all professors are liberal. The fact is, I can't remember having a conversation with hardly any of my colleagues about their politics, and it certainly is not a part of the hiring process. So conservatives, you know, I believe what they're really trying to do here is just annoy and agitate liberals and liberal professors. But by doing that, all they're going to do is
politicize. But you think that's the goal of the concealed carry law, or of what, of the rhetoric?
Both. You know, I think this is just for the gun side, and you're going to have someone speak on behalf of concealed carry, so you can let him confirm or deny. But I think this is really about just riling up, you know, it's just red meat to the red state base is what this is. There's not actually a plan in place to replace liberal professors with conservative professors. It's just a way to agitate and politicize the campuses even more than they already are agitated and politicized. It's just part of the, and this is part of this nationwide kind of witch hunt by which we try to demonize each other on the right or the left. But I would just ask the citizens and politicians who are also citizens of Kansas to take a more moderate and to take a more sensible long-range view. Like, we're not just talking about history and American studies, we're talking about physics and the STEM disciplines and engineering and computer science. And if you haven't noticed, most of our major Silicon Valley companies were founded by liberals. Liberals are actually really good at creating jobs. But who's going to want to open their company, start their company, or move a division of 200 or 500 jobs to Kansas, given this kind of cultural politics of agitating and antagonizing, castigating liberals?
So I want to get into, you said that you have attracted a fire hose of hatred. Can you spell that out? Because I feel like that might be a little bit what you're referring to in some of these comments.
Yeah, you know, people should take a look at my Kansas City Star editorial that ran last week. One of the criticisms that I got on my resignation letter was, well, he's not using any statistics. He's not backing anything up. And the reason for that was it was a resignation letter to my supervisors. I wasn't actually addressing that to all, to Breitbart or all of the kind of right-wing websites that have picked it up. So I thought, well, it's appropriate to write an editorial if that's what, you know, that's what the people want. So I did write an editorial in the Kansas City Star. Excuse me. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Well, the question is, I'd like to hear about what you referred to as a fire hose of hatred that you've attracted.
Oh, look, anyone can check out my mentions on Twitter. I've got like 250 friends and like 20,000 enemies on Twitter. You should check it out. It's my handle is at JakeDPhD, and you can see for yourself. I mean, it's just, you know, it is what it is. One thing that I've learned is that the right is so much more passionate about this issue than the left. My story has been reprinted in about seven or eight, at least, conservative blogs and websites, and a single progressive blog. And even in the progressive, the so-called progressive blog, the comment section was entirely dominated by concealed carry advocates. So one of the problems that we have in this society is that people have been intimidated out of speaking up. We know that the majority of Americans want concealed or don't want concealed carry on college campuses and hospitals, which is another issue that we have to talk about. I mean, if you're a doctor and you have to decide, is somebody asking for pain pills because they are an addict or because they are selling the pain pills, or do they have a genuine need? And how do you best serve society and that person? Sometimes you have to deny somebody, an addict who's going to become quite agitated, and you know there's the chance, or maybe even he tells you that he's got a gun with him. That's going to change that power dynamic in a very negative way.
I want to bring you back to universities just because that's where you reside. And I want to get back into this one other thing that you've talked about, which is this idea that it's going to be hard to recruit professors for jobs at KU and other state schools in Kansas. I understand that it's a pretty competitive job market, getting a good job as a professor, especially a tenured professor, although that takes time, is a tough game. You still think that people are going to be turning down jobs at KU over concealed carry on campus?
Well, I do. If you get two job offers and one is in a state with concealed carry and the other is in a state without concealed carry, and you feel as some people put the number at 86% of professors don't want guns in their classrooms. But I think that the other 14% just want a gun because they want to protect themselves from students. So it's really closer to probably, let's say, 90% of professors don't want guns. Now, if you're selecting applicants from that pool, and you know that that's how professors think, look, we can disagree. I'm not even saying that I'm right. I hope that the audience hears me. You know, people who advocate concealed carry, in most spaces and most places, you know, they're not the problem. The problem is not responsible gun owners. The problem is irresponsible gun owners.
Well, we'll get back to this.
Am I still going?
When KCUR Central Standard returns, we'll hear what one former state rep who pushed the new law has to say about all of this. And if you're currently part of a campus community, how do you think the law allowing guns in university buildings might shape your academic experience? 816-235-2888. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we've been hearing from Jacob Dorman, the KU professor who's handed in his resignation over concealed carry on campus. He says the law will have a chilling effect on classroom discussions and may even keep the best academics from taking jobs at Kansas schools. Of course, that is assuming that it goes through, because the Senate today is being asked to look at a bill that would exempt healthcare facilities and colleges from the concealed carry requirements. It's being debated in the legislature today. Jacob is still with us, but I'd like to get a response to his argument from a former representative who backed the concealed carry law. John Rubin, good morning.
Good morning, Gina.
Is this academic perspective new to you, or is this stuff you've heard before?
We've heard it all before, and with all due respect to the good professor, I must say that his comments to you are so full of half-truths and outright falsehoods and myths that it's important that your listeners hear the real story and the real facts about what the law that I was fortunate to co-sponsor did provide, and what the status quo before that law has been on college campuses. If I may.
You may.
First of all, the professor says that that he and other professors on college campuses are concerned about guns in the classroom. If the professor believes that prior to enactment of this law, or of course it takes effect July 1 without any changes, and that is, as you say, what the legislature is debating today, that the status quo before this law was that there were no guns on college campuses, he has bought into the sad myth that that is untrue. There have always been guns on college campuses. They have been in the hands of evildoers who have used those guns to take innocent life.
So unlawfully held guns on campus.
Correct. The myth that posting a picture of a gun with a line through it on the door of any public building on a college campus or elsewhere keeps guns out of those buildings and makes them gun-free zones is just that. It's an absolute myth. Just ask the families of the victims at Virginia Tech. Just ask the families of the unfortunate children at Sandy Hook.
You don't think that it makes it a little bit more of like a free-for-all?
Not at all. Not at all. Let me make sure that your listeners understand what the law provides. First of all, lost in this discussion, and apparently lost on the professor, is that the bill throughout has always provided an alternative to make sure that students and others on college campuses are safe. And the alternative has been instituting adequate security measures in all public buildings in the state of Kansas. That would be security guards, metal detectors, wands, and the like, to protect innocent people on college campuses. If those security measures are implemented, then indeed you would have gun-free zones on college campuses. The professor
I have heard about others, and
let me just finish,
okay.
Please. The professor had his opportunity. Let me have mine. If those measures are instituted, then the dream of the professor and others would in fact be a reality. We would have true gun-free zones because we would make sure that no guns are on college campuses in the hands of anyone, including perpetrators that would do harm to others. Now, much has been made of the costs that would be involved, but what I say to that is, if we want to protect ourselves and our families and others when we get on an airline by instituting those security measures, when we walk into a federal building, when you walk into the Kansas Capitol, where I served for 6 years as a state representative, where there were security guards and metal detectors, why wouldn't we want that same protection for our kids on college campuses and everyone else as well?
The cost prohibitive nature of that is kind of the part that I was going to bring up, but I
disagree with that, but go ahead with your question.
Well, I guess my question is that I'm wondering if you see the idea of safety on a college campus as being strictly a question of guns. Is that where we are today as a society, do you think?
Let me back up and say that the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms is a constitutional right granted to all law-abiding citizens of this state and our country. It has clearly been held by the Supreme Court to be an individual right, not a right through a militia. That was the Heller case in 2008. The Supreme Court in 2010 said it is clear that the framers counted the right to keep and bear arms among those fundamental rights necessary to our system of ordered liberty. So the right to bear arms by law-abiding citizens is not a is not something that the government can give or take away. That is a fundamental right that belongs to the people. The Supreme Court has so stated. And no matter how many alt-left-wing liberal college professors would like it to be otherwise, they cannot take away that right, and neither can the government at the federal level or at the state level. Now, to the specifics of the bill that I had the privilege of co-sponsoring, it is a concealed carry bill. What has also been lost in this discussion that your listeners should know is the right to get a concealed carry permit, to conceal carry in the state of Kansas, wherever it is allowed, is only after a person goes through a background check and in-depth substantive training on the use of firearms and safety measures with regard to the use of firearms. That is why I supported the concealed carry law, because I would like individuals, if there are not adequate security measures in place in any public building in the state of Kansas, to be able to defend themselves and other innocent people from those who are breaking the law and attempt to do harm in those places by having a properly trained person who has gone through a background check, a properly trained person with a firearm and knows how to use it to protect them. I have no doubt in my mind that the carnage at Virginia Tech, the carnage at Sandy Hook, the carnage at the movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, and elsewhere would have been much less if we had properly equipped, properly trained concealed carry permit holders to stop the shooter much earlier than he was able to be stopped.
I want to jump in. Because
let me just make one more distinction, if I may, before you jump in. And the distinction is, if there's an area where the professor and I might find some level of agreement, it's on open carry. I was not a co-sponsor or an open advocate of the open carry law that was recently passed in Kansas. Now, the distinction I would see there is, and what I am, again, want to emphasize to your listeners, is that I believe that the idea of someone who has not gone through a background check and who has not been properly trained in the use of firearms could present some of the issues and the questions that the professor alluded to and you have on college campuses. That's why what I support is the concealed carry law on college campuses, not necessarily open carry, and that's an important distinction.
I agree that that's an important distinction. I think what I'd like to bring this back to is the question about the possible academic repercussions and what you, as someone who co-sponsored this bill, as you've said, think about what you're hearing. You've said that, you know, the liberal professors, you know, however much they want to believe X, Y, or Z, like, it's just not true. But it seems, at least from the small bit of feedback we're getting so far, like, parents and students are also concerned. And I just want to know if that's something that you hear, or if that's something that bothers you, that people are worried about the sort of academic environment.
I have heard from parents and others who are concerned sending their children to places where their safety is not secured to the maximum extent possible, which has been the current system in the state of Kansas. Again, I'll go back to what I said before. I think if we want to make sure that our families getting on airplanes, going into federal buildings, going into the state capitol, are protected from shooters by adequate security measures, why shouldn't we have the same wish for our kids on college campuses? And I've heard from families that that have made decisions with regard to the college education for their kids, where they will be in the safest possible environment rather than an environment where a shooter has open season on defenseless students and others because of a lack of adequate security measures and a lack of ability to exercise one's constitutional rights to defend themselves and others.
I'm going to jump in here. We've got some feedback on Twitter where some of our listeners are agreeing that, well, they're taking maybe a position about professors in general saying things like tenure is a hate crime and busy snowflakes. But we're also hearing from someone who says KU was my 4.0 grade point average daughter's top choice. We will not send her to KU because of this gun policy. Tragedy waiting to happen. And we've also got Kathy and Casey, who is with us on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
What can you share?
Well, I am a publisher's rep, and I visit all the schools in Missouri and Kansas. And so it's a daily worry for me, this law that is coming up, thinking about the open carry. And I do know Dr. Dorman, and I do know a lot of professors at KU, and I meet with the graduate students every day. And all of them have mentioned to me over and over again, they have different backgrounds, both liberal and conservative, but they are looking for jobs that are anywhere but Kansas, Texas, Tennessee, some of these states that have this kind of carry law. And we're going to lose. So we're going to have the law of diminishing returns here. We're not the good professors, the good graduate students are going to go to other states because how scary this is to give these 21-year-olds on this campus. And sure, the legislator can say that we have to have these other things. Sure, you know, on getting on a plane or going to the Capitol building, we have all these measures. That's great. But on the other hand, what kind of funding are the legislators giving to the colleges that they're cutting all the time in higher ed? What kind of funding are they giving them to give this kind of support so that we can have metal detectors, so that we can have those kind of, you know, training or places to put guns? And I have to say, as a parent of three kids that attend Kansas colleges, two at K-State and one at KU, this is really frightening. Am I going to lose one to three of my kids because of some open shooter that is disgruntled because he got a bad grade on his test and he's still drunk from last night?
Okay, lots to respond to here. The question about funding is one, and I'd like to hear your response to that, John Rubin, but I also want to address the academic thing with you a little bit more. So if you could keep that response fairly brief, that would help us out.
Okay, I'll be as brief as I can. The caller expresses a lot of concerns not backed up by any facts. I regret that anyone, a professor or a family with a student, would leave the state of Kansas because of the choice of others in the state to exercise their constitutional rights to keep their family safe with a proper background check and training for a concealed carry permit holder. With regard to cost, I'll just say very briefly, it's a matter of priorities. If we can afford to pay the college basketball coach $5 million a year to coach a basketball team, can we find that money in a public-private partnership or otherwise in order to fund what is necessary to keep our kids safe on college campuses? The caller was concerned about a madcap shooter that had been drunk last night. Ma'am, that's the risk right now. The shooter at the Aurora Theater, the shooter at Virginia Tech, said that they went to those places to execute their mayhem because they saw the gun-free zone sign on those buildings and they knew they could shoot at will without any fear of anyone with a concealed carry permit shooting back at them.
Obviously, people have really different opinions and really different perspectives on whether guns should be allowed on campus. And I don't think we're going to resolve those disagreements today. But I am curious whether you're right or wrong. I'm curious what you think about what you're hearing, that so many graduate students are pursuing paths at schools outside of Kansas. Does that kind of information bother you?
Well, I certainly would regret any loss of of academic ability by in the state of Kansas by either professors or students. There are multiple reasons why families and individuals pick particular schools or decide to live in particular states. You asked the professor that question. There are multiple reasons. But if the main reason why someone chooses not to send their child to a Kansas school is because of the exercise of Kansans of their constitutional right to keep and bear arms with proper background checks and training on that campus to protect themselves and others, a right recognized consistently by the Supreme Court, then I would say that they have their priorities misplaced, because we Kansans do intend to continue our constitutional rights.
It is just sad to me that places of learning don't feel safe to people anymore, physically safe, whether you think the answer to that is allowing guns in the classroom or banning guns in the classroom. It's sad either way. And Jacob Dorman, you are still with us. I mean, mm-hmm. Have you previously felt safe in the classroom, or is it this moment, this law, that makes you feel unsafe in the classroom?
Well, I never said that I felt unsafe in the classroom before or hypothetically after. I said that I don't think it's appropriate. You know, Mr. Rubin, I respect the fact that he's spoken very moderately here today in measured terms, but he accused me of telling half-truths and then never pointed out a single half-truth. Other people have said, I've lied. I've never lied. Mr. Rubin, you know, when we have the testimony of a person who works on campus every day, who travels to every single school and testifies that people are indeed choosing to look elsewhere for work, he says that that's not a fact. I mean, if you can't accept a report of somebody who's in this environment every day as a fact, then we just can't agree on anything. And, you know, it's okay for us to disagree.
And I think we might have to.
Second Amendment.
I think we might have to. And I think we have to go. I'm so sorry. I just our conversation.
You accept limits on rights, including the First Amendment as well as the Second Amendment. And ultimately, it's not up to debate how professors feel.
Campuses have never been gun-free zones. Check Virginia Tech, Professor.
Jacob Dorman, John Rubin, we got to go. When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we are going to have a little music. I'm Gina Kaufman. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. Hello again. Now we're switching gears to meet a local musician, Erica Joy, whose voice defies description. So let's hear it. This is the song Happy Villain. Erica Joy, good morning.
Four-letter word, it says.
Good morning, Erica.
Hello.
Tell me about the song that we just heard.
Happy Villain. Well, that actually derives, supposed to be in a happy place. My friend asked me to write a song to help her ask her now wife for engagement and surprise her at one of my shows. So we came up with this, and like everything I write, it's more haunting than happy, will you marry me type of thing. So we laid it on Happy Villain. I wrote it with Britt Wild and performed it, and it did surprise her. She was utterly in tears, so that was it went pretty well.
Haunting is exactly one of the words I would use to describe your voice in general, which is funny because it's so mellow. You aren't doing anything to kind of give it a piercing, I mean, just the opposite. And I'm not sure exactly what it is, but there's something about your voice that just gets you. And I wonder if that's something that you've cultivated. Does it come naturally?
Yeah, I was trying to explain this the other day. It did actually come naturally to me a little bit later on in life. I mean, I worked in construction for Eco Studio One while I was in university just down the street, UMKC. And there were these big empty houses with lots of reverb. And I just ended up, you know, writing all these things that selfishly I needed. And then other people were like, wow, this makes a lot of sense. We have to try and do something with this, you know.
You think that the reverberation in the spaces where you were working construction had an influence on the sound that you ended up generating?
Yeah, I think there is some derivative there. It definitely is this ethereal bounce back at you. If anybody sings in the shower or sings in the staircase, it's, yeah, you feel like a rock star in that moment.
Well, yeah, but in my case, you get out of there and it doesn't last.
Fair.
Have you always sung and played guitar?
No, absolutely not. I grew up mainly just doing sports, and it wasn't in the paradigm of something I was going to do. I don't know how to explain that. It just wasn't in the, if you're playing a tennis game, it just wasn't part of the game. So I've always wanted to do like some sort of musical theater and be fantastical. And yeah, when I moved out and came to Kansas City, it opened up a lot of things for me, but that's one of them.
So you were just immersed in the sports world and just hadn't had a chance to give it a try?
Exactly. Yeah. It hadn't even occurred to me that I would have any kind of a voice. And then I was just jamming out to beloved Dixie Chicks in high school, and somebody was like, wow, I love Dixie Chicks. I will always say about it. And she was like, wow, I think you might be singing better than Natalie Maines. I was like, hold your breath. That's not a thing. She's the best thing that's ever happened. So that's when I kind of realized, wow, maybe I have something and I could help some people out and share with the world. So
tell me more about your background and just, I mean, I'm interested in the crossover maybe between your existence as a musician and your previous life as an athlete.
It's a gradual change like anything. I came to the city because of a cross-country scholarship to UMKC. Without that, I wouldn't even probably be talking to you right now. And I have hugely, I have two parts rolling with me. I'm very introverted and very extroverted. So with my running, it's sort of like a grindy, long distance, to the end, Lord of the Rings, I'm not going to stop type thing. And then, I have very tendencies to feel things very hard and very emotional as well. So, the two worlds meld together quite strangely at times, but...
Speaking of your personality, you were part of a storytelling event that I hosted it for Jen Listen Casey, and you told this story about going camping with some friends for your birthday, mm-hmm. knowing that it was going to storm out. And this was your birthday yes. present to yourself, was the knowledge that you were going to see your friends get rained on. I think that says a lot about you as a person.
So maybe I'm just a terrible person. I just enjoy messing with my friends on many levels, and that I love camping, and so putting them in my environment, being like, "Hey, handle this," was just hilarious to me. So
I want to hear just a little bit of another song, and then we're gonna hear you play live. But let's hear a little bit of a song called "You've Got a Hold on Me." Anything you want to say about it first?
This is another one of those longing for things that don't ever come to pass. So
comfort, you've got a hold on me. Oh, sink your watch it fall to the ground. We'll find you in time.
Do you do a lot of longing for things that don't come to pass?
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, it just I guess tends to be what I write about. I have a lot of sort of like angsty wake up and feel things type. Yeah, I just want people to feel things. So,
do you think that people don't feel things enough?
I guess, yeah, I have a, I don't know, general, I want, you know, vulnerable, raw interaction, and we're in this together type thing, and, you know, I've been let down like anybody else, and just my belief, like, in fairy tales, that you can believe in people and open up to them and be vulnerable, that's part of what I'm writing about. It's a connectivity of sort, I guess.
So there's a song that you're going to play for us in studio today called What the Hell. What is this song about?
Well, What the Hell is getting myself into situations that I'm like, I just reflect and I'm like, oh, how did I get here? I went to Guatemala and, you know, altitude sickness and the water sickness, and I'm in this gas station in the middle of nowhere. And you just those moments where you pause and you're like, How did I get here, you know?
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. I actually switched it up a little bit on you. Is that a thing? Is that okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I wanted to play something new because this is my raw connectivity vulnerable experience. and this is something I just wrote. So,
okay.
It's called Carol.
Great. Thank you.
Carol, she rode her horse to town, while I know her name. Blue, black, and white stripes, she'll cause it insane. Look in her eyes and she will blow smoke in your face. Hard burn, know your purpose in the game. And it's a wrecking shadow. You've got a lot to live for. Curtains wide, wrecking shadow. You've got a lot to live for. She gets drunk on the weekends to hide her feet. There was a dust in the air of mystery. No matter how many times you spin, there's always someone who try to beat your mind start to end. And it's a wrecking shadow. You've got a lot to curtains wide, wrecking shadow. You've got a lot to live for.
Thank you so much, Erica. That was awesome. It's great seeing you again, too.
Absolutely.
That was Erica Joy performing a new song. What's it called again?
It's called Carol.
Thanks. And you can catch her live in KC pretty often. Just check her out. And listen back to our conversation with Erica and our discussion about concealed carry on campus at kcur.org/centralstandard. You can do that later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, Art Inspired by the Missouri River gives us a better look at the relationship between the river and the city. That's tomorrow. Tune in at 10. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next, so stick around.